Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talk about Guelph stuff with Guelph Politico contributor Eli Ritter. It is almost August, which is typically supposed to mean a slower pace of news coverage, and that should definitely be the case for Guelph, since City Council is taking the month off as usual. It's the perfect time to stop and take stock of the year so far before we dive into what's sure to be a very busy fall that has a federal election and what's likely to be a very contentious budget season. In other words, it's the perfect time for another Guelph stuff. That is the topic for this week's Guelph Politicast. As you know, Guelph Stuff is the Politicast punditry segment, wherein we talk about Guelph-related news items and share our thoughts and opinions about them. This time on Guelph Stuff, we have a very busy slate of topics that cover a wide range of concerns to the community, and we take our often serious, sometimes skeptical, and occasionally whimsical eye to them. So what are we talking about this time? First, we will discuss why covering the Maxime Bernier Town Hall mattered, even though they asked the press not to disclose the location where it was taking place, and we'll talk about the local political bubbles and why it was so important that the political press try and break through them. Then we will talk about the great library crisis of 2019. Eli will talk about his experiences covering the public engagement portions, and I will talk about the politics of where council and staff should take the engagement going forward. And there's also a little bit of discussion about how the city of Guelph needs to better communicate council agendas and deadlines with the people of Guelph so that they might be able to better take part. And finally, we will look at council so far this year and what the events of the first 7 months of 2019 might tell us about what might happen in the last 4 months, especially with that difficult budget process ahead. So shall we get into Guelph stuff? I caught up with Eli via Skype from the United States earlier this week. Hey, Eli.
Oh, there we go. Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Not bad. I'm your foreign correspondent in the United States.
I was going to ask, why are you in the U.S.?
just for a music festival. I'm actually in an amusement park right now, so this is like some on-the-spot reporting.
And what do you have to report on?
Well, I did find a Census 2020 booth, so I'm bugging them.
That's American Census, right?
I took some stock photos.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, well... And it's good because now I have my own stock photos for any 2020 census stories. It's great.
Yeah, there'll be
a big like banner and everything.
There'll be so many of those when you go back to Humber. Well, here we're here to talk about another Guelph stuff.
Yeah.
So you and I, to start with, you and I both attended a, let's call it controversial political event with Maxime Bernier, the leader of the People's Party of Canada, which was highly controversial. Well, I guess he's controversial anywhere he goes, but I don't want to say we got into trouble, but I mean, those of us who went and those of us who didn't were caught in a bit of a controversy. So maybe let me start by explaining. I do feel bad about getting into it with the Today peeps, with Tony and Ken, because I feel like there was no right answer, but I also feel like there was no wrong answer either. And what I'll say to that is, you know, their response wasn't wrong, and maybe I phrased it as wrong, but I don't think my response was wrong either. And I think where I got perhaps offended was the idea that they were insinuating there was only one right way to cover Bernier, which was to not cover it at all. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, well, we had a good discussion about this, you know, after the meeting, I think, for about 20 minutes. So I came to the same conclusion. I think I jumped in the argument on Twitter after the fact, just because I felt kind of strongly that And it seemed as though, at least at the beginning, it was you being particularly targeted, and then it was me, and then nothing about the Mercury, who was also there.
Yeah.
So it seemed a little target. Like, it seemed strange to me that it was just like, oh, only you're bad for going.
Right.
And, like, I checked in with a couple people before I went. I even checked with you, because I was like, you know, what's the standard here? And you said you were going. So I made a decision because I was writing for the Guelph Post at the time. And then, so yeah, they were like, go ahead. So I went anyways.
Right. And to in case people have forgotten, and how could they have forgotten? But there was the condition because, I'm going to phrase it this way, the People's Party thought there was a threat of violence. The one threat of violence, quote unquote, we do know of is a poster that featured a knife and a swastika. Because of that, they moved it from the Guelph Youth Music Center to from a media perspective, still undisclosed location. I mean, I have seen people put two and two together online. But the condition for covering it was that we could not reveal the location before, during, or after. And I think those of us in the media have held that up by and large. The one thing I will say about the Mercury Tribune is the person who went was their new guy. So he maybe escapes judgment because he's the new guy. Whereas, I mean, we're not old guys, but we are less established media, shall we say. So, you know, as alternative media, we get the lion's share of the crappage dumped on us. Anyway.
Yeah, and just to add to note too, is another reason they moved it was concerns over property damage from the venues, from both venues. They were concerned that there would be, so it wasn't just for accuracy's sake, it wasn't just the People's Party, it was the venue owners as well that were concerned. So yeah, they felt that, you know, things could happen. I mean, if you look at the riots we've seen, or not riots, but like rallies, and not like this happens in Guelph a lot, but,
yeah,
you know, the rallies we've seen other places to do with contentious political things, I can see why that could potentially be a concern.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's been rough in a couple of other, and they cited Hamilton in particular, which seems to have been really terribly hit with this kind of violence, I don't want to say violence because it sounds like like, you know, gangs of New York, but I think the question is, I mean, too, that this is Guelph, as you said, like, we don't really see that kind of thing in Guelph. Not to say that it can't happen, but I do understand that, you know, perhaps precautions have to be taken. I think to get back to the main point of it too is that, you know, do you cover or not cover? And my, you know, you said you asked for my advice, as you should. To my estimation is, again, because I don't think that today point of view was wrong. My estimation was, is it worth covering what happened there and what was said, the loss of being able to disclose this one thing? And I think it was, and I think if you look at my article, which was like about 2,800 words, just like all the various quotes taken, I think it was worth the trade-off. I think it was worth, you know, not being able to disclose the location, because I think there were some juicy tidbits in there, whether you are aware of the People's Party or whether you are not aware of the People's Party or Maxime Bernier and what they stand for. I think it is, I think that 2,800 words was worth not being able to disclose the three or four or five in terms of describing the exact location.
And I have to say, I appreciated your story because it was the only one that went so in depth with what happened at the event. It was so worth it to read that. Like, anyone listening to this, if you haven't read it yet, I would encourage you to read that. And what I tried to do with my coverage during it, leading up to it, and stuff like that, was try to be as balanced as possible, because I think we had one of the first stories up when the issue first came about, because I was talking to Margaret at the time. So it was interesting because I covered it from day one to the end and just the different angles. I talked to the person who only wanted to go by Kate, so that was organizing the protest. Mm-hmm. And, I kind of got all the different angles, and it was frustrating that despite making sure that I covered everybody's voice, you still had people disappointed in the fact that, I got called communist. I also got called, alt-right or far-right. I didn't get the Nazi badge yet. But I think it was a little frustrating just from the journalistic edge, is that, in my story, too, I think, unless you got stuff in there, but I don't remember, I think I was the only one that had details from both the counter-protest or the protest and the Bernier event, because I called some people after, got some of the details. And I think that's what's most important, and what I find disappointing about the bigger media companies, and where I think that, and I don't think I'm representing Adam saying this, it's just me, but I think they failed when they didn't cover both, because what you need to do is cover both and allow the public to decide. Now, and I made it very clear that there was media restrictions, so they can call out the People's Party for that if they want to.
Right.
But that's not our job to do that, I don't think. And I think that we give them all the facts. We say, look, this is what happened at both events. And the bigger media, Guelph Today and Metroland, have the resources to do that, and yet they chose not to do that. And that is very, I don't think that would have happened under Phil Andrews and the old Mercury. I think that both things would have been covered. But I think it's disappointing that I think that was a failure for them, to be honest.
And I don't know where that failure comes from, whether that's a lack of resources or not, but it's disappointing, but I think you inadvertently discovered something kind of covering both sides, which is that both sides are kind of scared of each other. That you have the People's Party hiding from quote unquote Antifa thugs, while you have people who were organizing the counter protest not giving last names and fearing reprisal, whether that's in the form of digital reprisal or somebody actually taking the time to look you up and find out where you live or where you work or things like that. And so we have these, this is actually a really perfect representation of the quote unquote bubbles we live in, where we have one bubble versus another bubble, and the bubbles never, this is maybe where the analogy falls apart, but the bubbles never penetrate. They never, enter each other. It's just, we're lobbing balls from one bubble to the other, and maybe that's where you've got caught, people calling you on the one hand a sympathizer to the People's Party, on the other side you're being called a radical, and it's just, nobody's talking to each other, everybody's talking around each other to the people who are mediating between the two, which is the media.
Absolutely. And I find it interesting that, on one hand, the protesters wanted to hide their last name, and the other hand, they were calling out, Bernier for having a secret meeting, and the people at the secret meeting were calling out the protest. And it's just, I think if anything was lost here, it was the fact, if anything was to be taken away, the big idea would be is that we've lost the ability to have respectful public discourse and actually have democracy and be able to, safely and respectfully protest or counter protest or speak with each other. And I think it's sad on both sides that, one side had to hide their last name and the other side, had to, I think, and I don't know, I think probably you stand in a similar spot on this. I think that it's just kind of sad, to be honest, that has to be that way. And it shouldn't pick and choose. It shouldn't be Elizabeth May doesn't need to have a secret spot, but Bernie, I don't know. And I think you're completely, absolutely correct when you say that both sides are scared of each other. You said that night, and that's stuck with me since then, actually. But that is so true, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, too, is what's lost is, you know, there are a lot of people, like majority of people don't pay attention to politics as closely as the two of us are people who you know, are politically engaged. And so for most people may be aware of who the People's Party exists, and that Maxime Bernier is kind of this contrarian figure who came out of conservative politics, now runs his own party, and maybe don't know who and what they stand for, and maybe hear random things about racism and support for racism. And the truth is always so much more murkier than that. And I think what's lost is when we do have these bubbles, is that we can't go into a sort of a deeper exploration to that. And it's certainly not inviting to people who aren't already in the bubble to sort of say, why don't you come in and, you know, see what we're all about. I mean, not that anybody would want to per se, but there's a lack of engagement. So on the one hand, you're insulating your base, you're protecting your base, but on the other hand, you're not really doing anything to get your opinions and ideas out there beyond the base. And in fact, the controversy makes people sort of less willing to get involved, because look what happens when somebody puts a poster on Facebook.
For both of us, I think we'd immediately say the media, because to be honest, the way I started understanding council and was looking at running way back, you know, 2-3 years ago, the way I started was actually reading Guelph Politico and, you know, keeping an eye on some of the city council stuff that popped up in different stories, following your tweets, Adam. That's where it started for me. So, and I would ask questions. I don't know if you remember that, but
I remember.
Like, okay, what does this mean? What does that mean? Yeah, so, I mean, I think, I think you remember this moment, too, is when I think it was the Climate Emergency Council meeting, mm-hmm. where people were, you know, those high school kids were getting up and they were saying, so how do I get engaged? How do I know what's going on?
Right.
And the people, you know, the four of us in the media booth were like, okay, so we're here for 8 hours. We are doing something. Why don't you check us out?
Right.
And we'll help you. I honestly, like, the news media, like, and what's great about Guelph is there's different options. I mean, if you want the short, you know, quick version, maybe go to Guelph Today. If you want, you know, some of the number, like, if you want to go super in depth, go to Guelph Politico. If you want, I don't know, some of the activist views, go to the Post, or at least before, and then go Mercury will give you something else. Like, it's good because there's options. So If anyone young is listening to this, or old anyways, and you want to get into following politics, I mean, you have the internet. Google
yeah.
it. It'll be there. You know, Google, I think later in this podcast, we're going to talk about the library. If you want to know what's going on with the library, well, there are people that are paid to go and tell you what's going on with the library. Go
yeah.
and follow them and support them, and you'll know what's going on. I mean, that's the best place to start. That's what I think, anyways.
I think you're half right. I do think that, and this I include myself in this, is that we do need to sort of do a better job at explaining how we interact with the political structures and how you can get involved. And I've been thinking about this a lot, about, you know, in my council previews, you know, how can I make it, you know, the point of them is to just break down these like multi-page reports into like an easily digestible paragraph or two. But I also think that if somebody's reading that and it strikes in them like, oh my, I need to delegate on this. How do I do that? What's the next step? I think that is, I think that is something we need to be a bit better on, and sort of like the, not necessarily step-by-step instructions, but sort of pointing you in the right direction. Because and this point was made at a council meeting before the break, that the city's website is really no help in terms of pointing you into the information that you directly need in terms of like how you interact with government. It's good at like throwing a bunch of Guelph-related information at you at once, but there's really no kind of signpost to say, if you're interested in delegating here, If you're interested in, you know, finding out what's at the next council meeting agenda, click here, and that could probably be cleaner.
And to be honest with you, Adam, one of my, and you probably remember this from our interview, but one of the things that I had on my campaign platform that I think was different from anybody else in Guelph was to have, to hire someone that would focus on knowledge translation. It would work, you know, maybe make like a subdomain on the Guelph website where it was super easy. You could type in the word delegation and you could say, look at it. Big colorful bull, and what would be neat about that is it would be done by someone that's kind of impartial, and I know you're impartial, but like someone that's, you know, people could say, oh, this is a city official, you know, they're gonna summarize it very easily, and it's gonna be, you know, and that kind of thing. I think you're right, bang on about that, is, you know, something easy that's like, okay, to delegate, you do this, you do that, you fill out the form and you show up at this time, and, you know, expect the council meeting to last this long. And honestly, having like maybe a page on the Mercury post, like having a page, like if you take a bit of time and write a step-by-step thing, maybe that would be good. And then what you can do is you can always link that into each council preview. Maybe I'm not telling you what to do, but I mean something like that, and then, you know, they would know how to do it. But yeah, you're right, because I mean, when those high school kids came, and I've seen this with many people now, and I'm sure you have, is, is people want to delegate, but they don't know how, right? And then, you know, they're stuck. So,
well, it's not even just that, but people want to delegate, and then they find out, like, on the weekend before that council meeting that this issue is coming, and they're like, oh, geez, I want to talk about that, but it's too late because there's a deadline for when you can submit to delegate. So, you mentioned the library.
That's very true.
There has been some movement on that lately. I wanted to start with just, you went to a couple of the library, one of the library, like the public consultations meetings, right? Where people engaged and offered their ideas about what the library should have, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, coming out of that, your experiences there, you know, people have been really excited about this, right? Like, and can you just talk about like the experience of like seeing people interact and what their engagement has been on the library? Because I haven't been to those, and you have.
Yeah, no worries. I was actually trying to pull it up, but I do remember, just kind of offhand, I remember that like there were a lot of people there, even though it was in the mid afternoon. I remember I went to the one, I believe it was in May. And this is the one where they showed the models for the first time, the 3D models. They had a 2 p.m. and a 7 p.m., which is really nice because then you got the day people and the nighttime people. It was at the rec center. And, they had a really – it was good. One thing I think a lot of people liked and I found super useful is that they had really nice, like, a presentation, like very visual, very, like, it showed the money breakdown very easily. People were impressed. They were happy to see. And it was cool because just like the transportation master plan, they showed how the public input previously had altered their plans that they reached at that point. So I think that was super important for people to see that, okay, what I said earlier has impacted the stage that we're seeing now. And the one that we saw in May, now, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure it was the second last public sort of meeting about it. And the last one is this fall, or was supposed to be this fall.
Right.
And so I think, but to be honest with you, yeah, it was very helpful environment. They had like a lot of staff on hand from both the library and the city, and you were able to talk to them. And I remember I talked to the library CEO, Steve Kraft, and he said that he was very he was pretty happy with what they had so far. So I mean, I think that sums it up. The mood was good at the time. And then obviously that changed recently with everything that's now happened.
Right.
But yeah, it was good at the time.
Yeah, and I think it is interesting, in like 2 months later, we have sort of dueling narratives where on the one hand, the city wants to cut the budget and make a smaller library because There are a couple of amenity choices they don't agree with. And then we had this second report that came out and said that the architect's estimate for how much it was going to cost was actually higher. And I wonder, and this narrative has kind of been missing, is, you know, when did city staff start thinking this way? And were there, I mean, it does sound like there are two different groups that work here. The library is kind of working on its own to build its perfect library project with all its demands and all its wish list and the community's wish list. And then you have the city trying to say, oh, no, either because of Bill 108 or because for some reason it occurred to them that another city facility with cheaper room bookings was going to conflict with other city facilities, which I find not terribly convincing that this sort of just occurred to somebody. But now it's been set up with like, maybe it's not meant this way, that there's these two opposing sides. And again, the people are kind of stuck in the middle. And those are the people, I think, that those people who went to those meetings in the afternoon and the evening, the people you talked about, who are going to feel particularly stung by this, that you had this engagement that now seems to have not mattered, even if that's not entirely the case.
Yeah, and I think you had to point out on Twitter too, is that this is a staff recommendation and not a it's not like a counselor saying, oh, okay, we're gonna shrink this. So I did see on social media a lot of people getting really quickly mad at council. So let's clear the air right here. This is not, you know, someone on council saying this, but you're right. I think people are caught in the middle, and I don't know where this shift happened, but I know that the whole library thing has been going on since before, you know, since I was like 10 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this has been a long process.
Yeah.
So I'm not even the best person to speak to this, because I know there are people that have been involved with this since day one that have been going through the groans. And then, but I can imagine the frustration. You finally hit 2019. You finally hit a library. You see the model. It looks good. You feel like you're going to actually put some shovels in the ground. And then, bam, we're shortening the size. It's not going to be big enough. And I'm confused. Now, maybe you can explain this more. I understand how the way would have, and I know the development charges would impact this, but is there not already a massive sum set aside to put the shovels in the ground for the library at this point? Like, there's a budget
right
in place already, from my understanding, right?
There's
money put aside.
Right. What I think the Bill 108 does is says it limits how much you can spend from development charges on projects like a library or a park or a community center. It's not necessarily about the money that's been collected so far. It's about how much you can, how much of the development charges you can put towards it now. And of course, they've also divided development charges into like what's going to be development charges, which is going to go to things, what they call hard DCs, things like streetlights and pipes and roads and sidewalks. Basically the things you have to have in order to have a neighborhood. And soft DCs like libraries, parks, community centers, that kind of thing, fall into what they're going to call the community benefit charge, which is going to be substantially less than what DCs collect. So they basically have divided in two. Those changes haven't gone into effect yet, so we're still collecting the DCs the old-fashioned way, and those rules will come out in due course. But the immediate effect is that it puts a cap on how much money you can spend on projects like a library using development charges, and that's where it affects the budget, is that it's automatically lost millions of dollars because the provincial government says you can only spend so much on a project like that from development charges.
That makes sense. It's complicated for them to maneuver around all of this, right?
Right, and it's complicated when you have like a project like that, or the South End Community Center, where it, after years of consultation and planning and architect drawings and all that, and we, it's like we have a budget, we have a project, we have a blueprint, and then for somebody else to come in and go, no, 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 you can't spend that on that. And it's frustrating in that regard. And the library project is unique because it's sort of been library driven, not city driven. So the city's already doesn't have like direct control over what goes into the project, other than to, I guess, have veto power, which is kind of what that canceled report in the meeting was going to do. Was going to say, okay, you can have your library, but it's now going to be at like 36 million, not 50 million.
Right, and I know that, Cam Guthrie and his LUMCO have, mm-hmm. I mean, to their credit, they've been leading a very offensive initiative to first they were trying to delay a lot of the impacts. They were able to get that for a bit now, but they're really leading the charge at Queen's Park for other municipalities to try and soften the blow of a lot of the...
Yeah,
and there's not much they can do now, I guess. So,
well, not on this. Although, like, I think the city of Guelph is involved in sort of the molding of the rules and the regs for the new development charges collection. But I mean, yeah, I will also say that Mayor Guthrie and LUMCO has been effective in at the very least, like the action where the provincial government has. Stopped certain cuts from going into effect this fiscal year. Those cuts are still going into effect next fiscal year, but they didn't blow a hole of millions of dollars in city budgets for this year. God bless them. But, I mean, the thing I think people should keep in mind is, and especially going forward with the library, is that pressure works. We saw that on Monday with the autism funding fixes, quote-unquote fixes to the previous program, and this provincial government has proved that again and again, whether that's Bill 66, whether that's the pressure from LUMCO, that, you know, pressure campaigns do work. And if people are concerned about the library, you know, they should be reading up on that now so that they can bring, you know, very clear, very forward-moving, and I would also argue, like, counter-proposals to keep the library project they want on track, rather than having a debate on just, you know, cut or not cut, but like, how do we move forward to get that project that we want, and that the people who really want that library version that they collaborated so well on to come to fruition. Pressure works.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't work all the time, but it does work mm-hmm. sometimes. I mean, they might decide to acknowledge a library crisis. You never know. sorry, I had to throw that in there. But yeah, and I think if anything, at least with councils, a lot of the councilors, and at least I've seen this, are at least receptive and willing to listen to the community if they mm-hmm. show up to the chambers, and if they talk, if they join the discussion. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like Wayne Gretzky said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So if mm-hmm. you're not there to actually have your voice heard, whether it's for or against or whatever mm-hmm. side you're on, mm-hmm. if your voice is not being heard, then it's not even going to be considered, right? So right. It's got to be up there.
Right. I think that's right. And I think as opposed to the past when the library projects come up, and you said it was like before you were 10. I think it goes to like before you were even in school, and probably maybe even before you were born. But I don't think there's anyone on council right now who is like a library defeatist in terms of anyone who wants to shut the project down. I think everybody on council wants to see this go forward. They want it to be positive. And I think that this hiccup has sort of like reinforced. And I phrased it in my column last week on Today that the library project has been cursed for two decades. And I think it's, you know, we just have to make sure that we don't get anchored by the curse, and that people keep the positive attitude and keep petitioning and keeping up the pressure, as we've said. I guess this is a good place to go into council as a whole. So council is on break until September 3rd. And you've been at several council meetings this year. I've been at almost all the council meetings this year so far. I think, and you know, maybe you have a different opinion, but I think it has been fairly smooth. But I think there are warning signs as we get into the fall and we get into budget. Because I think when you look at things where the council disagrees, it gets really nasty. And I think that is going to be really tricky when we get into budget season, and there are going to have to be some tough decisions about where stuff is cut. And I'm kind of bracing myself for some potential nastiness in the fall. What do you think?
I think you're right. There's definitely some strong opinions, and you know, for example, maybe Leanne Piper after the climate emergency meeting, I think that was kind of telling, because she went on her blog and wrote this long thing, and it wasn't nasty or anything, but it was just like, you know, I'm taking a firm stance. This is what I believe, and this is what's going to happen. And
she was blowing off steam.
You know, yeah, there was people on both sides that say, and I think and I'm sure this is something you've seen over the years, but I think a big thing with council is how people interpret things. Like the way Dan Gibson may interpret how climate policy will work will be different from Leanne Piper. And then that's where you see the division, and with other things too. And I guess to throw a question back at you, do you think, and I think I've asked you this a couple times, but you said give it a bit, but do you think that Dominique O'Rourke and Rodrigo Galler, do you think that they've changed how things have gone? Like if they had the old counselors in there that they replaced, would it be much different? Do you think that they're voting along the same lines? What do you think about that? Because you've seen both sides now.
I think the most easiest one to answer is the Ward 2 seat, because I think Andy Van Hellemond was more pragmatic than Rodrigo. I've seen Rodrigo take some interesting votes where he doesn't he doesn't seem to side with like the left wing or the right wing. It's sort of case by case. So he's one of those, I guess, to borrow American political jargon, he's a swing vote. But I think Andy was always reliably just pragmatic, where it's just like the path of least resistance, never really going activist, the path of like staying the course. That summed up Andy fairly well. The case with Dominique versus Carl, I think that's still tougher, because I think, on the other hand, on one hand, I think Dominique is very much sort of a sub for Carl, not a sub per se, but she's like an obvious successor to Carl, because I think Carl was very much on the left of the political spectrum too. But I think there was also a bit of pragmatism to him as well. I think Dominique is a very aspirational sort of political figure, in terms of she wants to aspire to be better, do better. She's, you know, her background is in corporate communications, so that's very much part of who she is. So on the other hand, she's been very active in the community as well. And I think that will bear out, that she's going to be pretty reliably aspirational when it comes to what, you know, the immediate future on council is going to look like. But it's going to be tough. And you do have hardcore, I mean, to speak of pragmatists, you do have hardcore pragmatists on council, like Dan Gibson, like Mark McKinnon. And Mark McKinnon has said this in open sources recently. He said, I can't remember if this is the exact quote or not, but he said, nothing's sacred. So, even though he's pushing for the South End Community Center, you know, he's perfectly willing to say, like, if the financial case isn't there, then, you know, it may be another couple of years. So I think this is where where the it's not necessarily going to be like a like our traditional left-right dynamic. I think it's going to be a very hard discussion between people who are on council who are going to be like, any cut is a bad cut, and the pragmatists are going to be like, well, we kind of cut it, we kind of got to cut something because we can't have like an 8-10% tax increase. And especially coming off a year where council has been very enthusiastic about the lowest tax increase in years, all in, including the infrastructure levy. That'll be an interesting thing to watch is like, will there still be an infrastructure levy this year? Will council still, the majority of them still be bold enough to re-up that for next year, given the other challenges? The more immediate challenges of like very particular sections getting less funding, like ambulance services or public health.
Right. And I could see how that could be changed. And I think I agree with your analysis of Rodrigo. That's what I was thinking too, is that I feel like he's been all over the map a little bit, which is probably, it's good to see that you can have different points of view. And then
you need swing votes.
Yeah, and I think with Dominique, it's been really neat because, I mean, I didn't watch the last council as much as I watched this council, but I know that with Dominique, I've really appreciated, and as someone that's in communications, her communication, like explanatory, it gives background to why she makes a decision, asks lots of questions, and is someone that's very easy to approach and ask questions about, and I don't know. Has she been? She's been on your podcast, right? She's been on
Open Sources. Already, so. Yeah, she was on Open Sources actually before she went on council. So it's almost time for her to come on again. I've been very focused. Speaking of communications, I've been very focused on the two counselors who have never come on Open Sources and trying to get them to come on. I just want to add that it's not like Carl wasn't incommunicado, but I mean, Carl wasn't also actively engaged on things like social media and things like that, which I think despite the concerns about social media, I still think is important for politicians to be active and involved on those platforms because of how easy it is to communicate. But I mean, that has been an improvement too, I will say.
And I think there's even a purely political case you can make for it. You can win elections with social media. Like, look at Cam Guthrie or even Dan. Dan, who came to the city and then won, a year later after he moved to Guelph. Like, I mean, social media is a great tool for that kind of stuff. And it's not bad. And to be on Twitter, to give updates. I mean, I think that the mayor probably is one of the best communicators. Despite where you are in the political spectrum, he's really great for giving updates on what council is trying to do and things like that. But definitely that's something that's important. I think that those councilors, it's pretty obvious who they are.
Yeah.
Maybe they should consider being a little bit more open because, you know, it's good to engage people even when it's not election time, right?
So. Right. Are you at Woodstock 99? Is that what's going on?
Do you hear noises?
Yeah. It sounds like there's a riot in effect.
Oh, just crowds. No riots yet. however, I have seen a lot more Trump hats here than I did, back in Canada. So I've... there's a lot of division here. I mean, that's a topic for another podcast.
I think so. Talking to Americans, the very serious Guelph Politicast version. Why don't we leave that there? I'll let you get back to your musical festival and check out the acts. And don't worry about politics for a couple of days.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Eli.
Great to see ya.
And once again, that was Eli Ritter. Eli's going back to J school in September, so I'm not sure how often he'll be contributing, but I'm sure he'll be staying in touch. Council will be back in session on September 3rd. The federal election date is still October 21st, and there will be a lot more to talk about regarding the library throughout the fall, so stay tuned. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. You can download the Guelph Politicast every Wednesday from iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or you can download it from the host at Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. And when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you will also get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. There is also the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico, and you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you very shortly. And until then, see you next time.